Welcome back to the Mike McEntee Show. No matter where you are on the political spectrum, you have to agree that our political system isn't working very smoothly at the moment. Dysfunction, gridlock, and propaganda are permeating the government that's supposed to be by the people and for the people. The government isn't supposed to be some alien entity that we're opposed to, but something that we all do together. So what do you do about that? Our next guest, former Minnesota Governor Arne Carlson, is part of a bipartisan group that's trying to do something. It's a campaign to fix politics now in the 2018 cycle. Governor, welcome to the show.
Well, delighted. Thank you.
Good to have you on here. You can't fix something you don't know the cause of. So when we talk about fixing politics, what are we trying to fix? What's going wrong here?
Well, I think that's probably the best question you can possibly raise, because I think there are a number of things that, quote, have gone wrong and that we have failed to pick up over the years. The first is some kind of long-term public policy development process. We used to have congressional committees that on a bipartisan basis developed long-term policy. And yes, there were disagreements, but the goal was always the same, particularly in foreign policy. After World War II, it was clearly understood by both political parties that foreign policy is bipartisan or nonpartisan, that our differences end with our shoreline. And so over the years, we've kind of erased the guidelines. The biggest one that this reform group is concerned with is the role that big money plays in politics. And I'm being polite.
Okay.
Let me give you an example. You may recall a few months ago, 12 Republican senators went behind closed doors to draft a healthcare bill. Do you recall that?
Yes, I do. I think a lot of people do.
Yeah, exactly. Now, the drug industry alone pumped in about $220,000 in campaign contributions to each of those members. So let's say roughly, and I'll be conservative, let's just say it was $200,000. So here are 12 people developing health care policy for the United States, for all of its citizens, and the drug industry has pumped in over $200,000 per participant in those meetings. At what point does a campaign contribution become a bribe?
So what you're saying here is we have a government that's been bought and sold, that campaign
all
contributions...
All too often that is the case. And I think we have to be honest with ourselves and say, yes, that is the problem.
So that's the problem. How did we get here? How did we allow this to happen?
I can't really answer that question. I think it's something that slowly and steadily evolved. And both political parties participated, one obviously a lot more than the other, but nevertheless, both were involved. And that is, on one hand, there have been reform efforts over the years to try to restrict how much a person can give. But the more you press down on that reform, the more we got into so-called independent expenditures. And now you have the Supreme Court decision relative to corporate participation in candidate support. So it's a wide open field for incumbents to basically say yes to big money. Because it's a lot easier to raise big money than it is to raise small money. But having said that, there are some contradictions in what I'm saying. One is that the average congressman spends about 30 hours a week on the telephone raising bucks, kind of pay, you know, for play.
Mm-hmm.
The second thing is that several campaigns, starting with Obama, really raised incredible amounts of money from the Internet. And that allowed the small donor to really participate. So I would say the money picture is slowly changing, and I think the Internet has played a large role in it. But nevertheless, it would be well for both political parties to recognize the enormous harm in allowing public policy to be bought and sold, or even the perception that public policy can be bought and sold.
Now, every time we talk about campaign financing, people bring up the what you alluded to, the Citizens United decision by the Supreme Court, and that we
can't
do anything until something there changes. And every time we talk about that, everybody says, well, it's not going to change very fast, not until we have another election, and we can change, put people in there who want to change it. But you're talking about changing it this election cycle. How do you do that?
Yeah, it can be changed. I think it's so easy to say, well, it's hopeless. No, it's not hopeless. It was not a good court decision. It's not something I support. But I'll tell you what the state of Minnesota can do starting tomorrow. And that is change the how corporations give to the political system. First of all, it should be understood that publicly held corporations are owned entirely by the shareholders. Yet, the system that we currently operate under allows management, who are employees of the shareholders, to make those donations. If we in Minnesota just compelled our corporations to obey a law that basically says you cannot give shareholder money without approval of the board of directors, that faucet would be turned off.
Can Minnesota do that? I mean, corporations operate in many
yes,
states.
Yes, it can do that, but there's been no will to do it. And by the way, I may add, the guilt is on both sides of the aisle.
Okay, so
that's... be done. And I hope that you will call up, says some of the leaders in the legislature, call up the governor. Find out why isn't it done here? Why hasn't it been explored here?
I think that's an excellent idea, and I don't know why it hasn't been explored. It's probably something that maybe somebody after hearing this might take up.
It's absolutely outrageous to think that your employee can spend your money without your permission.
Okay. We're speaking with former Governor Arne Carlson, who we're talking about fixing campaign politics, or fixing politics, I should say, right now in the 2018 cycle. So that's the obvious thing that we can do. Is there something else? Because most of us are sitting
total
here and saying,
disclosure,
okay.
Total and complete disclosure. We have a right to know exactly who's paying to influence public policy.
We can't even get Donald Trump to release
this. This is a committee for good governance, and that's as much as you want to know. No, I want to know. I want to list who's actually giving that money. Real and total and complete disclosure.
We can't even get Donald Trump to release his tax returns. How are we going to compel?
I would argue, okay, you and I can't control or have very little influence over what Donald Trump does. But you know what? We have a lot of influence and a lot of control of what our local legislators and governor do. And the truth is we haven't asked them to do it. Why haven't? Well, why, for instance, let me give an example. The governor should have launched, and he can still do it, a key bipartisan commission. Forget about all the politicos, but of good, solid, quality citizens. Let's work on how do we make full transparency relative to campaign contributions? How do we prohibit or change the corporate governance so that the shareholders are the ones who make the contribution and not management? That's just two big steps that we could take right here, right now.
And these are things we can do in Minnesota. Are there things that...
Why hasn't the governor come out with a bipartisan commission to set up redistricting? Let's once and for all end this nonsense of legislators putting together districts that fit their political needs. These legislators are public servants. They work for us, not vice versa. They should not be allowed to select their constituents. It's the constituents that select them. Now, Walter Mondale and Hal Quie have been extremely active in this, and yet incumbents ignore the recommendations.
Now, with redistricting, You know, that I think it's a great idea, but it's the legislature, I believe, has the constitutional authority to do that. Wouldn't the governor look like he's overstepping his bounds if he stepped in and tried to do something like that?
My heavens, he vetoed their funding. No,
so
it's
the line's
not overstepping
there.
That's frankly his job. He should be pushing for this very, very hard. Very hard. Particularly after all that's happened.
Well, let's talk about Governor Dayton a little bit here, because I know this is he just the other day gave his final State of the State address. He was kind of wrapping up what he has done in his 8 years in office. When you look at the governor right now, how do you evaluate him? How do you evaluate Governor Dayton?
Well, I'm kind of hesitant as a former governor, frankly, to do it. So if I may, I'll refrain from making judgment, but I will make recommendations on policies that I think are germane. And let me start with this. Let me start with the stadium.
Mm-hmm.
That was an area where the governor, his administration, and the legislature on a bipartisan basis really badly bungled and wasted hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars of public's money. And to this date, there is nothing that even resembles public hearings on the subject. We endlessly pour money into huge, multi-billion-dollar public sports entities without the proper disclosure. One magazine rated the stadium deal the third worst in the country, and that was before they were aware of the fact that Minneapolis was an ongoing faucet of money. So I suspect they would rate it probably as the worst in history. But it's draining our resources, something awful, and nobody wants to speak out on it. Nobody wants to do anything about it, and it just continues. Let me give you an example. Several weeks ago, the school district in Minneapolis announced a $33 million shortfall. And all that's been discussed is how can we curtail the number of school days? How can we cut back on what we provide to our students? The same week, roughly, some $79 million was sent to Glenn Taylor, the owner of the two basketball teams, Target Center, for repairs and improvements made to Target Center.
Mm-hmm.
Now, decades ago, this would have resulted in a whale of a public controversy. At a minimum, a very civilized public debate about our priorities. In today's environment, it's not mentioned at all.
Why is that?
Well, I think that question has to be raised of our incumbents. Why is that? Why are there no public hearings? Or take, for instance, the management at the University of Minnesota, stepping from scandal to scandal to scandal to scandal. I've been working for over 3 years with people on the faculty of the University of Minnesota relative to disclosure. For instance, on drug testing. This is where drug companies come and look for people if you will, evaluate the performance of drugs. Over the decades, we've had, I think, six people have died. And yet, there's an absence of public hearings, there's an absence of any form of public responsibility, and nobody in management at the University of Minnesota is responsible, and the Board of Regents isn't responsible. So apparently, nobody's responsible. But having said that, when I brought to their attention that their oversight responsibilities were chaired by a doctor who was in the pay of the very drug companies that were testing their drugs, nothing ever happened.
Now, when we get to next year, there's going to be a new governor here in Minnesota, and there's a crop of candidates out there, declared and undeclared at the moment, who are running or not, you know, are considering running.
Yeah.
When you start looking around, is there anybody who is going to address these issues that you're bringing up right now? Anybody that
well,
that, you say?
Well, that's a very fair question. I think both political parties have gone to their so-called bases, and I think we can fairly say they tend to be on the extremes. So if you're a Republican, you've got to cultivate the Trump support, the ultra-right, in order to get through that mechanism. And if you're a Democrat, you got to go through all these sub-caucuses and so-called progressive groups. That there's an absence of focus on the big, broad needs of the middle. And I think that's missing. I personally think that Tim Walz would probably be the strongest candidate to run. But I'd have to say that there's been a real absence of discussing public policy. And I'd like to see what these candidates stand for when it comes to the development of long-term public policy. Where is Minnesota going? I would like to see one of the first things is the passage of a sunshine law, which is that the public, the taxpayer, is entitled to know when, where, and how their money is being spent. I don't want issues like hundreds of millions of dollars stadiums not being disclosed. I don't want scandals at the University of Minnesota not be dealt with and no accountability built in. I think that's wrong. And we have the same thing in many, many other areas of the state of Minnesota. The public is entitled to know how, when, and why their money is being spent. And right now, that is being withheld from us.
You're talking about long-term public policy. You mentioned Tim Walz is a strong candidate.
Yeah, all of them. Where do you plan to take the state of Minnesota? What policy ideas and concepts do you have? Where are we going? Why is it you and I are talking about all these reforms on the on the elected system, and the candidates aren't?
One candidate, I think, who we've got 8 years of a record, so we know where he goes, former Governor Tim Pawlenty, is considering a run. When you look at him, do you think he might be addressing these things if he were to run?
Well, you got to ask yourself, did he address any of them when he was governor? And then you got to ask yourself, who was he in bed with? The big bone that I would pick with Governor Pawlenty is that he used the governorship of the state of Minnesota as a stepping stone to national office, and all too often sacrificed the needs of Minnesota in order to achieve his personal objective. And the result was, I think it's fair to say we went from deficit to deficit to deficit. We borrowed from the future to prevent tax increases. And the state, frankly, was in a whale of a mess when Governor Dayton took over.
We're speaking with former Governor Arnie Carlson. We started our conversation talking about how to fix politics. I want to take us back to that here for one last question.
Yeah.
Okay. You got involved in the marriage equality fight here in Minnesota, siding with the people who are trying to prevent a discriminatory amendment from being written into the Constitution. That campaign really crossed party lines. When you look at that, are there lessons to be taken from that that might help us fix politics?
Well, I was involved in two fights over the amendment. One was voter ID.
Right.
And that's where I teamed up with Governor Dayton to fight that. And obviously the other one is marriage equality. I think government has an obligation, one, to make certain that every single citizen, without exception, every citizen has a clear path to participate in voting. We want them to vote. The second part is we have no business in the privacy of a bedroom. My heavens, this, the federal government can't balance its budget. It can't even come close to balancing a budget. It can't develop a coherent foreign policy. Why in the world do they have so much time to focus on what two individuals choose to do?
Both those campaigns really appealed to more than just one party. Was there
Absolutely. It was a marvelous, I would argue that that was a marvelous example of when the broad middle came together. Minnesota is basically a prudent state when it comes to the expenditure of money, and it's a very progressive state when it comes to protecting individual rights. And I think that's splendid. I think that speaks so well to Minnesota and to Minnesotans. And sadly, our political parties are not quite in the middle, and they should be.
Well, I think maybe you've just laid out a blueprint for how some of them can move that direction and make that happen.
I hope so. I truly hope so. I would keep my eye on Richard Painter, for instance, who's going to run for the Senate. I think you're going to find that he's going to run as a moderate. The quote that comes up, I think it's a very interesting one. It comes from Dwight Eisenhower. Was asked, are you a Republican or a Democrat? And he was a Republican. There's no question about that. But I thought his answer to that question was very interesting, and it was to the effect of, well, when it comes to issues of money, I'm a Republican. When it comes to issues of people, I'm a Democrat. Now, bear in mind, when he was talking about money back in the 1950s, he was talking about prudency and balancing budgets. He wasn't talking about these incredible deficits that the modern-day Republicans have adopted.
Well, those are... This is an interesting conversation, and I am so glad that we're having it, because if we need to have this type of conversation before we move into the next election. People do need to think about
these
things.
Well, I'm delighted. Thank you.
We've been speaking with Governor Ernie Carlson. Thank you so much for your time today.
I'm delighted. I appreciate it. Thanks.